Chapter 2. When I was done working out in the gym, I needed a shower. It was a lung-burning, muscle-aching workout that left my legs like jelly and my arms shaky. Literally, my arms were so weary, my hands were shaking. Even my fingers hurt. And the 6 Chinese Spec Ops guys who were in the gym while I was there had been doing a tougher workout. They were already well into their exercises before I got to the gym, and when I left, they were headed out of the gym to run sprints down the Dutchman's long spine corridor. I felt like collapsing. In the shower, I had to kneel down, because it was a Theranin-sized shower, and we hadn't been able to fix that when we refitted the Dutchman in Earth orbit. Beds had been lengthened to human size by cutting away cabinets we didn't need, but adjusting showers had not been on the priority list in the short time we had before our pirated star carrier had to depart. My shaky fingers missed the shower controls several times, and I cursed out loud. "Something wrong, Colonel Joe?" Skippy's voice had an undertone of genuine concern. "You seem especially clumsy this morning." "Especially? Well, thanks a lot, Skippy. I meant no offense. A clumsy monkey is a dead monkey, Joe. When you're swinging from trees in the jungle, the clumsy monkey falls and gets eaten by a leopard." "Ha!" I had to laugh at that. "Not many leopards in this part of the galaxy, Skippy. My arms are tired, that's all. I did a tough workout."
"I know. I was watching you. Don't you think you were overdoing it a bit, Joe?"
"Hell no. Those Spec Ops guys and the women, hell, especially the women, are super high speed, Skippy. Damn it, I'm in good shape, and I'm younger than most of them, and they're kicking my ass already. I'd like to train with them, but the first time one of them throws me to the mat without breaking a sweat, I think I'd totally lose their respect."
"Wow, you truly are a dumb monkey. How can anyone be so clueless? Joe, those Spec Ops people are completely intimidated by you. They have a huge chip on their shoulders about you, and about the other members of the original Merry Band of Pirates."
"What?" I sputtered under the cascading water. "Give me a minute to rinse off." With a still shaky hand, I pressed the button to shut off the water and backed out to stand up carefully to reach for a towel.
"How do you figure that? Those people have gone through the toughest military training there is. They're the best. They're all completely super confident."
"Super confident about most things, probably, yes. About you? No. Think about it from their point of view, Joe. When UNEF went off-world, they stayed behind. For one reason or another, they were left behind. They missed out on all the action. Right there, they all think they have something to prove to you, Chang, and the others."
"Huh. I guess you're right, Skippy. I hadn't thought of that."
"Well, that's just the beginning. You not only went off-world, you captured 2 alien starships, brought back priceless intel, and rescued your entire species from Krystang. Joe, these Spec Ops people are completely in awe of you. You and all the original crew. Yes, they have passed an extremely rigorous selection process that requires incredible physical and mental toughness, however. What have they actually accomplished? What are the odds that, during their entire military careers, they will accomplish anything anywhere close to what you did? The answer is about 0, Joe, and they all know it. Joe, they all think you look down on them." Crap. He was right. I had been utterly clueless. I'd been thinking only of myself and not considering how the new crew might think of their situation. Back when I was in the U.S. Army 10th Mountain Infantry Division and our battalion first went into Nigeria to boost the peacekeeping efforts in that region, I had been in awe of the guys in the battalion that was rotating out. They had been there. They had lived it. They knew the territory. They had been in combat. They'd done it, for real. I had only been briefed on it. And you could see it in their eyes, too. They knew that many of the guys in our battalion, including me, were green and had never carried a rifle in a hostile area. It made a difference. And when it was our battalion's turn to pull out and go home, we changed. All of us. We'd been there. We knew. The Spec Ops people now aboard the Flying Dutchman had not been there, had not been off-world, had likely never seen an alien in person. They'd been put through hell on Earth by the Krystang. I'd been spared that experience. Still, I had served in UNEF on Paradise, and they hadn't. Many Special Forces units had not made the trip to Paradise. The Krystang hadn't especially wanted them, and governments on Earth may have been hedging their bets, keeping most of their elite combat power close to home. At some point, if the Dutchman hadn't appeared in the sky for Skippy to stomp the Kristang-like bugs, maybe the Spec Ops people would have at least tried to hit the Kristang. It would have been a futile gesture to attack the Kristang in their bunkers, and impossible to attack them aboard their ships in orbit. Any Spec Ops action would have been a measure of pure desperation, to make a last stand for the sake of human honor and nothing else. I didn't often think about what life had been like for people on Earth while I was off-world. It must have been horrible. Terrifying. On Paradise, we dealt with the reality that all our supplies, especially food, had to be brought from Earth by the Kristang, and we'd seen supply shipments getting thin toward the end of my stay there. That had been bad enough. To gradually come to the realization that we were fighting on the wrong side of the war, that our allies were oppressing our home planet, that if UNEF didn't follow the Kristang's every command, the lizards could starve us by halting food shipments. It must have been worse, much worse, on Earth. On Paradise, we had been worried about the survival of the expeditionary force. People on Earth knew the stakes were much higher, not only the fate of billions of humans. The survival of our entire species could have been at risk. When we went off-world with UNEF, we hadn't known what we were getting into, but we expected it to be bad, very bad. On Earth, people at first considered the Kristang to be saviors, aliens who looked like big ugly lizards, still, our saviors from the invading Ruhar. The Kristang had saved Earth from the Ruhar, so when the Kristang began pushing their weight around, interfering in human affairs, taking territory, taking rare minerals and other materials, at first, people figured that was the price of supporting the war effort, the price of keeping the Ruhar from conquering our home planet and enslaving humanity. When was it that most people on Earth had gotten the uneasy feeling that they'd made a bad bargain, that the Kristang, who by then had total control of the planet, were as bad as we'd imagined the Ruhar would be? I didn't know. That was something I should ask the new crew about. They probably wanted to talk about it, needed to talk about it. Needed to talk about it to someone who hadn't lived through it. You're right, Skippy. I should have thought of this. I'm the commander. I'm supposed to know what's on my people's minds. Hey, wait a minute. How do you know what they're thinking?
From listening to them talk, duh. Damn, you're a dope sometimes.
Skippy, you can't do that. People need privacy.
Joe, I can't not do that. I monitor every system on this ship in real time that includes video and audio inputs. You already know I watch you sleep, I watch you in the shower, I watch you eat.
Yeah, I know. Kinda creepy there, Skippy.
Uh-huh. As if I care what you monkeys look like naked. You're just as ugly with your clothes on.
Fine. Whatever. What you can't do is tell me or anyone else what you heard people say in private. We must have at least the illusion of privacy aboard the ship. If people know you watch everything they do, that's something they can deal with because you're an alien AI. To most people, you're part of the furniture, an invisible ship system. If people know their fellow crew members or their commander are spying on them, using details of their private lives for gossip, that could destroy morale. Do you understand that?
I don't see what the big deal is, Joe. Sure, I won't tell you or anyone else what I see or hear.
One question. What if I find out someone is planning to do something stupid that would harm the ship or the mission? In that case, you do tell me. Only the details I need to hear. Got it?
I think so, yes.
Damn. You monkeys have such complicated social rules for a species so low on the development scale. I just got to my office, a converted storage closet close to the bridge and combat information center compartments, when Skippy gave me a warning.
Uh-oh, Colonel Joe, heads up. Baldilocks is on his way to see you.
Baldilocks, I laughed.
Who is that?
United States Navy Lieutenant Williams, he explained. Williams commanded our four-man SEAL team. He had a shaved head, hence Skippy's nickname for him. Also, I'd already determined Skippy didn't like him. I knew that because Skippy told me so. Williams and I were not best of friends so far either. My impression was he thought I was completely unqualified for command of such an important mission, that I was unprofessional, uncommitted, too young and inexperienced, not taking my responsibilities seriously, and not much of a soldier. I disagreed with that last one. Thanks for the warning, Skippy. I straightened up in my chair and adjusted the iPad to the ergonomically correct position on the table, rather than in my lap where it had been. Williams knocked on the wall beside the door a minute later. The door was permanently recessed into the wall. I wanted to literally have an open door policy.
Colonel Bishop?
At the time, I was pretending to read something on my iPad so he wouldn't know that Skippy had warned me he was coming. Lieutenant Williams, come in, sit down. How you finding the Flying Dutchman?
It's still a bit overwhelming,
he admitted.
When we came aboard, I thought we would have somewhat of an advantage, because SEAL teams are accustomed to being deployed aboard ships. I'm finding that doesn't apply much here.
We chatted for 5 minutes, him talking about how amazing it was to be in space, aboard a captured alien starship, me expressing gratefulness for how we'd been able to modify the Dutchman before we left Earth. Some of the ornate decoration in the bridge and CIC compartments had been toned down or painted over. We now had a galley, a place to cook, serve and eat food, real food, and we had cargo holds full of food, enough to last 70 people for years. Maybe the best modification was the beds. Sleeping compartments had been cut away so a full-size bed fit inside. No more trying to sleep curled up in a cramped, Theranin-sized bed. Chang was supposed to come into my office soon for our daily meeting, so I decided to find out what Williams wanted.
What's the issue, Lieutenant? I assume you didn't come in here to chat about the ship.
Sir, I appreciate the experience Sergeant Adams brings, Williams said, and I welcome her advice. However, she is not familiar with SEAL or Ranger training methods, or training methods of the British SAS, French paratroopers.
You've made your point, Lieutenant, I interrupted him. Chang was my executive officer, second in command of the ship. Sims was in charge of logistics and third in command. Desai was our chief pilot. Giraud was part of the French paratrooper team. And Adams, at Chang's suggestion, I had assigned to be in charge of training our spec ops people about the ship and the fancy new alien weapons they would be using.
You shouldn't be so cocky, Lieutenant Williams, Skippy added. You weren't even the first choice to lead the SEAL team.
Williams didn't flinch.
Sir,
it wasn't clear whether he was addressing that remark to me or to the invisible Skippy.
I know I was the second choice.
Fourth choice, actually, Skippy chimed in helpfully.
Fourth? Williams asked, startled this time.
Lieutenant Jerome Hansen was the first choice, Skippy explained. He turned down the assignment because he did not want to serve under Colonel Bishop. Hansen felt you were too inexperienced for such responsibility, Joe.
Well, that's understandable, I responded. Probably most of the Spec Ops people felt that way. Hell, I felt that way.
Lieutenant Williams here agreed to serve under your command and was originally the second choice. However, he refused the secret conditions your military wanted to impose.
What secret conditions?
I looked at Williams sharply. Williams bit his lip and explained.
The DIA guys wanted me to take over the ship if I felt it was necessary, sir. I refused.
Yep, you did, Skippy added cheerily. And the third guy they offered the assignment to also refused their condition, so they went back to you and dropped their idiot idea of planning a mutiny. That's why, technically, you are the fourth choice to command the SEAL team.
Williams looked back to me.
I didn't know that, sir. I think the mutiny idea was something DIA and, I suspect, CIA wanted.
I appreciate that you didn't come aboard intending to take over my ship, Lieutenant. My ship. I was now thinking of the Flying Dutchman as mine. When had that happened?
I can't promise that no one else has that idea. We have four other militaries aboard. And I can't vouch for the Ranger team either, sir.
You make a very good point, Lieutenant Williams, Skippy said. Colonel Joe, perhaps I should make an announcement over the intercom and create a demonstration of what will happen if any idiot troop of monkeys tries to take over the ship. How about I close and lock all the doors on the ship and shut off the ventilation? Ooh, and I can kill the artificial gravity also. That will slow down any mutineers.
Skippy, you can't do that.
Huh?
Clearly I can, Joe.
Oh. Sure, I get it, you're right. I'll leave ventilation and gravity on in the bridge and CIC compartments.
That's not my point, Skippy. You can't... Well, let me say this a different way. You should not do anything like that. If there is a plan for mutiny, I need to handle that myself. Having a shiny beer can do the work for me only makes me look weak as a commander. I don't need any help here, Skippy. This is something you need to keep out of.
You sure about this, Joe? 100%. You know about science-y stuff, I know monkeys. Damn it, I mean, I know humans, people. Stay out of this.
Skippy paused.
I'll make you a deal, Colonel Joe. I will stay out of this unless there is an actual attempted mutiny. If that happens, certain monkeys are going to find out real quick that I am not always a friendly little shiny beer can. Anybody screws with me, they will seriously regret it. Ask the former Theranin crew of this ship if they have any questions about that.
We get your point, Skippy. Loud and clear. A potential mutiny is a subject that I needed to discuss with my command team, Chang, Sims, and Adams. The entire idea of anyone trying to forcefully take over the ship is idiotic. Without Skippy's cooperation, the ship was never getting home.
Williams, it is not my intention for Sergeant Adams to interfere with how you train your SEAL team. She will remain in charge of overall training. You and your team may have studied how to use armored suits in combats. You have no experience with them even in training. Bring your team to the training hold at 1300 hours, and I'll show you what I mean. Arranged along one wall, or I guess aboard a ship, I should have called it a bulkhead, were 10 Kristang-powered armor suits. There were more of them in another compartment. We'd taken 46 suits from the Kristang troop ship in Earth orbit. They weren't all in good condition, so out of the 46 units, we had 42 that were operational. The good news is that the troop ship had equipment for modifying suits, and we now had that equipment aboard the Flying Dutchman. We had been able to adjust most of the suits so that normal-sized humans, now anyone above 5'6" in height, could use a suit. There hadn't been a whole lot of extra time before we departed Earth orbit, so I didn't have a whole lot of experience with the new suits. I still had way more experience than any of the new crew. In addition to powered armor suits, the Kristang troop ships had provided us with plenty of rifles, ammo, and Zinger anti-aircraft missiles. Except for Theranin combats, we were equipped almost entirely with Kristang military gear, including Z-phones for everyone and night vision gear. The food, of course, all came from Earth. When I arrived at the large cargo hold we used for training, it was 1250 hours, and both Adams and Williams were already suited up in armor, with only their faceplates open. In the military, if you weren't early, you were late, so of course Williams and his SEAL team had gotten there half an hour early. Along with Adams was Giraud. The French paratrooper leader was checking Williams' suit and explaining its features. On the other side of the cargo hold, Adams was going through exercises, bending over, easily jumping to touch the ceiling that was 10 meters high, and spinning her unloaded Kristang rifle like it was a baton and she was a drum majorette. Generally, she was showing off. I figured she was doing it to intimidate Williams, and from the look on his face, it may have been working. Adams and Giraud showed Williams how the armor suit worked, and he went through a series of familiarization exercises. He was good. Damn good. He caught on much faster than I had back when I put on a suit for the first time. When Adams and Giraud were satisfied that Williams knew enough not to hurt himself, it was time for the show. There was a large circle painted on the floor. Adams announced that the object of the game was like sumo wrestling. Whoever knocked their opponent out of the circle won the match. They took positions opposite each other, toes touching the painted circle, and Giraud announced, "Begin." Williams, knowing Adams had more experience with powered armor, crouched slightly, then launched himself forward. He wasn't going to attempt any advanced hand-to-hand combat. He was going to rely on the suit's speed, power, and mass to knock Adams out of the circle. Adams had a different idea. She stood in place, but as soon as Williams moved forward, a door in the bulkhead behind Adams slammed open, and a combat launched itself across the hold. The combat's feet never touched the floor. It flew through the air in the blink of an eye, crashing into Williams, knocking him to go skidding across the deck. He struggled against the combat, but the Kristang-powered armor was no match for the superior technology of a Theranin combat. Standing in place and controlling the combat through gestures, Adams had the combat gently but firmly pick Williams up like a rag doll and held him against the far bulkhead. "Enough," Giraud declared, and Adams gestured for the combat to release Williams.
Williams popped his faceplate open, looked at Adams, and bowed.
"Well played, Sergeant. You did warn me to expect the unexpected out here."
"Everything is unexpected out here," I said. "Do you have any questions, Lieutenant?"
To his credit, Williams wasn't insulted, he wasn't angry. He had an enormous grin.
Getting familiar with powered armor and combats was going to be a bigger challenge than he thought, and Special Forces people absolutely love challenges.
"No questions at all, Colonel," he said to me.
To his team, he added,
"People, this is going to be fun, so pay attention."
I stayed in the training hold for an hour, taking the opportunity to gain time in a powered suit myself because it had been weeks since I'd used one. Fortunately, it quickly became familiar again, and I followed along with the SEAL team as Adams and Giroux put them through a series of exercises. It was good, I told myself, for the SEALs to see their commander knew what he was doing. The truth is, I was showing off and I didn't care who knew it. Adams caught my eye a couple times, like when I jumped, touched the ceiling, did a backflip on the way down, and landed perfectly on my feet. That wasn't all skill. The suit's sensors detected the floor and would have pulled me upright to land safely if I hadn't managed to do it on my own. After an hour of fun, I had to get out of the suit and leave because my duty shift on the bridge started in 2 hours and I wanted to grab a snack before then. Out in the corridor, I put my Z-phone earpiece in.
"Hey, Skippy, you call me Colonel Joe, you call Sims Major Tammy, you call Chang Colonel Kong." Kong was his given name. "Or King Kong." Chang actually enjoyed being called King Kong. That nickname had totally backfired on Skippy.
"You call Lieutenant Williams Baldilocks. You have some sort of nickname for most people. But you only ever call Sergeant Adams Sergeant Adams. Why is that? Her first name is Margaret. Why don't you call her Meg or Peggy or... Hey, how about you call her Sarge Marge?"
"Wow, I am impressed. I thought I'd seen the depths of your stupidity before, but you're setting a new record low for dumb-dumbness.
You have met Sergeant Adams, right?"
"Duh, I met her before I met you." "Oh, that was a rhetorical question. Double duh.
Sarge Marge, huh? Tell me, what do you think would happen if I referred to Sergeant Adams by that quaint nickname?"
She'd kick your ass?"
"Most likely. I seek fun, Joe, not suicide."
"Okay. Good talk, then."
"Uh-huh, sure. Hey, I noticed you showing off big time in the training hold."
"Eh, commander's privilege, Skippy. Besides, I do need to maintain proficiency with powered armor."
"Why? You're the commander. You should remain aboard the ship."
"No way, no way. Am I staying here all the time, Skippy? And are you absolutely certain there is no possibility that I will never need to use a suit out here?"
He sighed.
"No, I can't say that for certain, Joe.
Fine, you have fun. Just don't hurt yourself. I won't always be there to protect you when you do something stupid."
"Got it, Skippy. Thanks."